Hello everyone, time pressure means it's back to audio reviews, I'm afraid. And this is a review of from the 12th of August of Much Ado About Nothing, with Caitlin's debut as a director. Before that though, I should admit that I took a chance of an illegal entry, having seen a gate open 5 minutes before the main gate. So I never being shy in these situations, I snuck in. I was very pleased that I was definitely going to get the spot on the lawn at St. John's College that I wanted, front and centre, obviously, and then was mortified to find out that actors were actually going through a routine and working on something. So I tried to make myself as invisible as possible. And sorry if I interrupted anyone. As I said, it's Caitlin's debut as a director, which was very exciting. I was fairly confident things would be good, given her background in choreographing sword fighting scenes, etc., and her experience off the festival. And indeed, this was proven to be very true indeed. Her use of space was magnificent. The actors were everywhere, all coming from all directions, in the audience, through the aisles, everything really well blocked out. The costuming was superb. Generally throughout, Don John's costumes, the mask costumes, all of those things, it was all very fittingly done. No trendy revisionism, as the Times quote is emblazoned on the website, and as is proclaimed in the opening of the programme, the Cambridge Shakespeare Festival prides itself on an artistic policy which strips away unnecessary theatrical artifice and gimmickry. And as you know, it's also proclaimed that we have Elizabethan-style costumes and Elizabethan-style music, and we got it all last night. Has to be said, we don't always stick to those particular guidelines, but last night we did. So it was all certainly true here, as was everything I wrote and enthused about in my book on the festival. Everything was in evidence, from the lovely cheerful opening to the triumphant ending. It opened with Leonato painting in repose, not knowing all the excitement that was ahead of him. Just another thing on the costuming, the overnight scene in the tomb, which often is not particularly well done, was very well done here. And we had monks, monk costumes, you know, actors in monk costumes, doubling, tripling, whatever, with a very effective lighting. And given the fact that the season's starting to change and it's darker in August, this was particularly effective. I was just thinking that if it had been in the first half of the festival, it probably wouldn't have been quite as effective as it was. So I was saying the use of space was very good. The interactions with the audience were absolutely stunning. One of the first ones actually came with Baraccio stealing my provisions, and I didn't see it happening because I was so wrapped up in Adrian Palmer's Don John, which was utterly captivating, that I never noticed Baraccio sneaking up at all, leaving Nicholas Maxwell to ask if it was okay to steal from me. Of course, it's always okay, but he wasn't to know that and had to whisper it in my ear. Usually I acknowledge this by facial expression. I'm always absolutely delighted and honoured to be one of the people who things are nicked from, of course. But you couldn't take your eyes off Don John. He was absolutely dripping with disdain, stylishly dressed, had everyone's attention. In fact, so good was Adrian's Don John that it outshone his Dogberry, which makes you wonder what wonderful festival he's had. He's had Falstaff, Don John and Dogberry. What a heck of a festival. The Don John was the pantomime villain, which absolutely fitting, of course, and tied in with various folk, fable and fairy tale elements that are definitely there in the play. And it was nice to see them acknowledged and brought forward and integrated into everything. Baraccio continued interplay later on with various points of the play. I have to say, and apologies to Mr. Maxwell here, because I've got a note on something he did later on in the play, I think in the second half, and I was laughing so much at it that I can't read my own writing now. All I know is that the last word is brilliant, and there's a big smiley face. So it was something that was brilliant, but there were many brilliant things in this play. Fred Arnott, of course, is a very funny man. Every time he appears, he can just provoke laughter, seemingly at the drop of a hat. So he was very funny from the start. He doubled as Friar Francis and the Verges. More on him anon, but I just remembered another thing there as I was about to say something about Fred. I just remembered another thing that Don John did at one point, said to the lady beside me that she was more frightening than me, more frightening than him. So Don John said, "Ah, you're more frightening than me," which was absolutely excellent. Lots of other parts I may forget later, so let me say that Molly Murphy as an Irish Margaret was perfect, coming into her own when she out-bantered Benedict later in the play. I started to talk about doubling, and there was much doubling, as you would expect. Mark Newton, who gave us an excellent Claudio, also doubled as one of the watch, while Helena Fenton's played the sexton as well as Hero. Newton and Fenton did very well as the other couple to the dynamic duo of Benedict and Beatrice. How I wish, though, for an alternate ending to Hero's story, where she punches her father in the face and knees Don Pedro and Claudio in the groin, and then storms off the back of the stage saying, "A pox on all men." Okay, that would be stretching the text a bit and perhaps rewriting Shakespeare, but I'd still love to see one day. I've already mentioned that Fred Arnott was doubling ably. I think actually he may have played a third part as well. Colin Savage was a very convincing Leonato, and he also popped up, uncredited, in a surprise doubling role to great effect. I remember one of his touches as Leonato was as he walked across the grass after the disastrous wedding shambles. He looked down at the discarded veil on the ground, and the look on his face was magnificent. It was a really lovely touch. I'm probably going to pronounce this wrongly, so apologies in advance, but Emilio Cavaciotti, I knew I would, and Hugh Brentnell, of whom more later, also doubled from Don Pedro and Benedict respectively to two other members of the watch kicking off the second half in a well-staged intro to it. Emilio as Don Pedro was very cleverly portrayed in a way that I've never seen before. He was a big, burly man, not regal or clever. You could see him being easily outwitted by Don John and Baraccio, but he was a man's man, definitely a man that other men would follow, as they did. I've not seen him played like this before, but he was very effective and very clever, and has given me much food for thought. There was a great moment, I think it's quite late in the play, but slightly, my memory's not to be trusted too much. There was a great moment where he was shouting into the audience, which brought spontaneous applause. There was much spontaneous applause. There was laughter throughout. There was at least five occasions in the first half alone where the entire audience broke into spontaneous applause. So I won't be listing them all here, but it was impressive to see how often it happened. Given that I'm reading my terrible handwriting, I should stress, because I probably made a mistake earlier on, that Hero was played by Helena Fenton, and very good she was. Before moving on to Benedict, I have some words to say about Beatrice, played by Becky Coops. She got off to an excellent start, very convincing straight away, and a fine foil for Benedict in the opening banters. There was a moment where she was playing with bearded and non-bearded men in the audience. It was very funny indeed, especially the non-bearded. Lovely touch with the Scotch jig with Hero, ending with "Got that? Okay," to a roar of laughter. It makes no sense when I say it here, of course, but if you'd seen it, you would be laughing too. And her refusal of Don Pedro was so believable and so funny at the same time. It was sort of modern and for all ages, begging the audience, begging her colleagues, her compatriots, her peers to get her out of this situation. Poor Don Pedro. But it's obviously her interplay with Benedict and the audience is the main thing, and this brought laughter after laughter. I remember her turning to an audience member and saying, "Do not answer that." A moment of spontaneous laughter and applause. There were lovely small touches too, similar to Leonato glancing at the veil in a way. At one point she was walking off behind the trees and the bushes, and as she left the main bit of the stage, she picked up some flowers and glanced back at Benedict. It was very touching and moving and meaningful gesture. Her most excellent part, though, of the whole play was the famous "If I Were a Man," what she would do and what she would do in the marketplace. She was absolutely raging with a boiling frustration of not being able to redress the slight done to Hero, and not being a man and all the unfair pressures on women in society and all the restraints just came flying out of her. It was absolutely magnificent, a great roar of anger. And wonderful though Becky was, Hugh Brentnell as Benedict absolutely stole the evening. He was everywhere. He was involved, it seemed, at all times. Even when he wasn't on the stage, you knew he was coming back soon. You were still thinking about what he'd just done. He was excellent from the beginning, and when we got to the "this can be no trick" speech, he just took off. Even scenes where he was a minor character, such as when he was in the background as the wedding fell apart, the look in his eyes was just was just spellbinding. It was hypnotic, really. He gave everything from the beginning of his parts on the stage to the end, even through the encores. He interacted with everyone on stage, obviously. He interacted with everyone in the audience, it seemed. He was all over the place, in a good sense, not in a bad sense. Instead of being all over the place, he was absolutely in the zone. He was so alert to everything that was happening in his improvisation, and his spontaneous reactions to audience feedback was just extraordinary. I wondered, actually, if he could possibly be like that every night. I'm not saying that he's not good every night, but I wondered if I'd seen him, absolutely just hit it this one night. I hope he is as good as this every single night, naturally. I say, fighting my selfish desire to have been present at the special performance. And actually, one special performance like this would be enough, more than enough. What an exhilarating feeling it must be to own a major Shakespeare role like that. What adrenaline, what a rush it must give you. Though, in future time, looking back, contemplating in some far-off tranquillity of older age, what a thing to look back on and say to yourself, I did that. I would say that Hugh accomplished more in one evening than I have in my life so far, and it's not been a short one, or that I will in my life when it comes to its totality. And I say that with no jealousy or rancour, just overflowing admiration, really. It's one thing to sit on the sidelines and talk and write about art. It's another thing to produce it altogether. And there can never be any doubt which is the more important activity. There were dozens of great little touches all the way through this production. So much thought has been put into it. It was so perfectly carried off that I don't really know what else to say except well done, everybody. Oh yeah, there was one flaw. There always has to be a flaw, doesn't there? There was one flaw, and the flaw was this. Should have come back for an extra encore. Everybody round about me was waiting on it. Nobody was moving. Everybody was willing to give you an extra cheer. My God, you deserved it. Good night.